There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 7, titled Nick of Time. This episode was written by Richard Matheson and adapted for the screen by Rod Serling, directed by Richard L. Baer, produced by Buck Houghton, music by Marius Constant, Eric Cook, Jerry Goldsmith, and Bernard Herrmann. In the cast were William Shatner, Patricia Breslin, and Guy Wilkerson, and Stafford Rep, which we will also include in the cast. It wasn't a very big cast, so we'll include Stafford Rep as well. Its original air date was November 18th of 1960, and you can watch this on Tubi TV, FreeV TV. Some of the cable channels still have it on, as well as the Paramount Plus streaming network, as well as the DVDs or Blu-rays. And again, I will say it, if you have a little bit of expendable income, or since Christmas is coming up, ask your loved ones that want to buy you something to buy you the Twilight Zone Blu-ray set, just for the Christmas and clearness of the color and sound, or of the picture and sound. It is worth the price of admission. So definitely give that a look. As always, there are spoilers ahead. So if you haven't seen this episode or haven't seen it in many years, put a pause on the podcast. Go watch the episode, come back, and listen to it unless you want me to spoil it for you, which I am happy to do. That's why I'm here. So, without further ado, let's get into the opening narration. The hand belongs to Mr. Don S. Carter, male member of a honeymoon team en route across the Ohio countryside to New York City. In a moment, they will be subjected to a gift most humans never receive in a lifetime. For one penny, they will be able to look into the future. The time is now. The place is a little diner in Ridgeview, Ohio. And what this young couple doesn't realize is that this town happens to lie on the outskirts of the Twilight Zone. So, what can we say about this episode? Certainly it's a pretty good episode in a sea of Season 2 classic, well-known, world-renowned, well-loved episodes like Eye of the Beholder or The Howling Man. And this episode certainly holds its own. It certainly has a bit of claustrophobia in it in relation to the diner, but it also has some elements of danger as far as them exploring the town and that sort of thing. And it deals in sort of a race against time, I guess, in a way you could say, in dealing with when their car will be fixed, if they'll be able to get out of town, and if Don's obsession will be consuming him to that point, to the point that they don't actually ever leave town. So the story follows Don Carter and his wife Patricia, or Pat, as they are traveling from through Ohio to New York City for their honeymoon. They are newlyweds and they have taken off to go to New York for their honeymoon. And they run into a bit of car trouble and have to have their car towed in to the mechanic in town, played by Stafford Rep, who we will see later on in an episode with Lee Marvin and Strother Martin and Lee Van Cleef and James Best, called The Grave, which is one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. And I know I've said that about 37 of the, 40 episodes or however many I've done this far, but I do love The Grave, and we will discuss that when we get to it. But until then, we're talking about Nick of Time. Now, this episode deals with a few different topics, a few different ideas. One of them being superstition, and we get that in the beginning scenes of the episode, where Don and his wife don't split a lamppost when they're walking to the diner after they talk to Stafford Rep, who tells them it'll be a couple hours before you can get their car fixed. And, they don't split a lamppost, and, salt over the shoulder when they sit down, those kind of, that kind of superstition. Nothing that's like, we don't see Don turn the light switch off three times, to ward off evil spirits or what have you. But certainly he is superstitious, like Michael Scott in The Office. He's not very, but he's a little stitious, And the idea of this episode leans into just how far that superstition will go, which I think it does quite well in building the tension for how much will Don accept, how much will he buy into it, how much will he take. And we get the suspension, and we get the antagonism from a little tabletop coin-operated fortune-telling machine with a little devil head with a jewel eye sitting on the table of a diner. Now, one thing I notice, and I know it's off-topic of what we're supposed to be talking about, the episode of The Twilight Zone with William Shatner and Patty Breslin, and I think it's funny that when they go to the diner, they order iced coffee. Now, in the realm of society today, of course, it looks nothing like necessarily like the iced coffee we get. I mean, in a way, I guess it does, because it's literally just coffee and ice cubes. So it's not like a blended drink or anything. We're not talking about Don and Patty wandering upon the first Starbucks in recorded history. We're talking about two people at a small diner in the downtown square area of a small town in nowhere, Ohio, drinking coffee with ice in it. But I had never, nowadays iced coffee is everywhere. You go to the dog park and they got an iced coffee machine there, or a truck set up where you can buy it from them, like a food truck, But back then, and certainly this is the only instance of a television show from the 50s or 60s or even 70s that I can recall that I can never see a character order iced coffee. So I always thought that was kind of odd. I know it's a little off topic from talking about supernatural superstition and, Don carrying a rabbit's foot in his pocket on his keychain, iced coffee has nothing to do with superstition, but it certainly has to do with my curiosity. So anyone, if you were alive back in the 60s or the 70s, slightly before I was born, obviously, write to me, dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know if that was a thing that people did, or if you did it when you were running around in the 60s or 70s and stopped at a diner in Ridgeview, Ohio, because your car had to be fixed because you were on your way to New York City with your with your new bride to celebrate your honeymoon. Did you order a nice coffee? I don't know why I'm continuing on with that, but I don't know. It just stuck with me, and I always thought that was rather interesting. Especially given how prevalent it is today. I didn't think it was necessarily prevalent back then, but people, it made it into a script of a popular sci-fi and suspense anthology television show from 1960. So, be that as it may. If anyone is of that age that was of sound mind and body at that time, drop me an email at dimensionsdzpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know if that was a thing, because I'm quite interested. And now back to the story. So Don and Pat have to wait for their car to be fixed. The mechanic has to order out for a part to be delivered, and of course that has to come from a town or two over, so they got time, you know, that they have to wait before the car can be fixed. And so they go to a diner to have some lunch and kind of just wait it out. And Don starts plugging in pennies into the Mystic Seer machine, which is still one of the coolest things from the Twilight Zone, in my opinion. Again, the idea of inanimate objects causing unimaginable, you know, agony and suspense and that sort of thing. I love it. I love it. There are some people that actually make replicas of it. You can find them online. They cost you a little bit of money, certainly more than the box set of the Blu-rays of the Twilight Zone would cost you. Certainly triple or even quadruple what that might cost you to buy a Mystic Seer. So just buy the Blu-rays. So Don starts plugging, you know, pennies into this thing and asking it questions like, well, of course, on his mind is at the office he works at, he is up for a promotion to become the office manager at the office he works at. And we kind of get that feeling, which adds to the character of Don being somewhat superstitious, that he is, from the moment he walks into the diner, he is quite obsessed with the idea of, did he get the job? Did he get, you know, did he get turned down? Who got the job if he didn't get it? That sort of thing. So the fact that he even stops and calls his office at some point to ask. And of course, you know, no word had been made yet. But, so he keeps plugging in money into this machine, asking it questions like, you know, is the car going to be fixed today? Will I become the office manager? And when he does that one, it says it has already been decided. And so he calls the office and comes to find out that he got the job, that he would be starting it when he got back from his honeymoon. But you get the idea that Don is a very somewhat obsessive person, in the fact that if he gets something on his mind, he's got to have it, you know, rectified before he can move on to bigger and better and other things, which is why he gets caught in the cycle he gets caught in with the Mystic Seer machine, because he keeps asking it questions. It keeps giving specific but vague enough answers for him to continue plugging money into it and doing all that. And at one point, he and Patty leave the diner to go check on the car, and when they're crossing the street, Don saves Patty's life because she almost gets hit by a car speeding through town. And of course, this just drives him further into the madness of, is this machine, you know, actually foretelling the future for him and his wife? So it gets to the point that when they go back to the diner, there are a couple sitting in the table that they wanted, that they were sitting at with the Mystic Seer, and they actually wait for the couple to get up and leave before they go and take the same seat again for, you know, per Dawn's request, basically. Because Patty is, of course, the level-headed straight man, I guess you could say, in this scenario. She is the one that's, while Dawn kind of slips further and further into this mania of, is this machine actually telling us what's going to happen and when and how, and his wife is the one that's very grounded and very, you know, this is not what you think it is. This is just a toy. It's just a little novelty, you know, time-wasting device for laughs, you know. And, of course, he's obsessed with it. And the tension builds and the tension builds and the tension builds until his wife finally talks him off the ledge, so to speak, and the right when she kind of talks some sense into him, the mechanic comes in and says, hey, we were able to get that part quicker than we anticipated, so we can have you, you know, rolling here in just a minute. If you want to, you know, settle up your bill at the cafe and meet me over at the garage, I'll have it just about ready for you, and you can get on your way. And so Don and his wife get up, and he talks to the Mystic Seer and says, you know, we're going to go where we want and do what we want, and we're going to have the life we choose to have, because we make our own choices and we make our own, you know, future. And he walks out the door with his wife hand in hand. And I think what really seals the episode nicely at the end is when they walk out the door, another couple runs in and sits at the same table and starts plugging pennies into the machine. And the wife is frantic, and the man is very harried and very, you know, manic and on edge. And, you know, she starts saying, well, can we leave today? Can we leave this week? You know, are we stuck here? You know, and they keep plugging pennies into it to ask it questions. And that's where the episode ends. And that's where we get the closing narration. Counterbalance in the little town of Ridgeview, Ohio. Two people permanently enslaved by the tyranny of fear and superstition, facing the future with a kind of helpless dread. Two others, facing the future with confidence, having escaped one of the darker places of the Twilight Zone. So, this episode was good in the fact that it was suspenseful, and it was somewhat claustrophobic, because most of the episode takes place in one booth in a diner, other than a couple of shots of them going out on the town or coming into the diner from the mechanics in the first, and then going out to check on the car and Patty almost getting hit. The rest of it takes place in a very claustrophobic part of a little booth of a diner with two people huddled around a little tabletop fortune-telling machine. And it takes the idea that the Twilight Zone goes back to again and again of an inanimate object, or a MacGuffin, I guess you could say, being the cause of trouble. Although, maybe albeit manufactured trouble, but maybe not. Maybe actual trouble, maybe not manufactured in the mind. But either way, an inanimate object causing havoc in the lives of ordinary people. We saw it in the fear even though nowhere near as good of an episode as this one. And the slot machine actually did talk and stalk Franklin and actually gave him his dollar back because he walked out into the parking lot. But we find this idea, this theme of inanimate objects being somewhat supernatural in a way that they can predict the future. And we even see this same idea kind of done again in the episode A Most Unusual Camera, where it's a camera that can kind of tell the future through pictures, so to speak. And we'll get there when we get there. It'll be coming up. But in this episode, it's a little bobble-headed doll figure head with a jeweled eye on top of a tabletop machine that tells your fortune. A distraction, something small that you never really think of. In the town, one of the towns I should say I grew up in, there was a diner that we used to go to for breakfast every now and again. And it was a diner that was around in the 40s and the 50s. And on the tables, they still had the little jukeboxes that you could put a quarter in and play a song from, you know, one of the songs on the jukebox. And it had a little thing that you could flip through the three or four little different, pages of you, if you will, of the different songs. But they were just about the size of the Mystic Seer, but it was just a little jukebox. And I always thought that was the neatest thing when I was a kid. And then I watched this episode and I'm like, oh, it's like the jukebox, except it tells your fortune and perhaps makes you mentally unstable. We don't know. But we do know that this episode is, to me, it seems like it comes and goes in the pantheon of what is and what isn't a good episode of The Twilight Zone. And some people like it, some people hate it. Some people hate it just because it's William Shatner. Some people hate it just because, you know, I mean, there's a myriad of reasons to hate it, and there's a lot of reasons to love it. Stylistically, with suspense, and you know, we weren't at William Shatner being full William Shatner at this point. He was still trying to act serious, and I think he does a pretty decent job. But we wind up with a quite well put together episode that is suspenseful and interesting and very thought provoking and very very something to study from the point of view of superstition and mental health, I guess you could say, to the idea that someone could manufacture the idea in their head that a little fortune-telling machine that you pay a penny to could run your life for you. It certainly could be studied. But let's study this episode. So we have William Shatner and Patty Breslin playing Don and Pat Carter. Like I said, Shatner wasn't quite full Shatner at this point. That wouldn't happen for a number of years later until he was on Star Trek. And Patty Breslin is actually just a great actress. We'll talk about her, but she was in, you know, a couple episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. She was in a very good one, I would say, of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And Catherine from the Good Evening podcast, if you're listening to this, and I hope you are, The Crooked Road, you know which one I'm talking about. The Crooked Road is an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which was covered by Catherine and her sister Annie on the Good Evening podcast, Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast, which stars Patty Breslin and Walter Matthau, about a corrupt sheriff. And it's quite a good episode. If you have the ability to look at it, it's I think it's on Hulu. Give it a look. It's definitely worth looking at. It's a good episode. But we're not talking about Alfred Hitchcock Presents. We're talking about William Shatner being superstitious in a diner in the town of Ridgeview, Ohio. Now, as I said, this episode, I never really thought a whole lot of it the first time or two I saw it, but over the years, and it's funny how some episodes do this, over the years, it has kind of grown on me to where it's one of those ones that I don't care what's happening. If I turn on the TV and it's on, I'm going to sit and watch it. Just because, I mean, it's just a solid episode. Directed by Richard L. Baer on a story by Richard Matheson, adapted for the screen by Rod Serling. You can't get a whole lot better than that team right there. Because this was before Richard Matheson started having health issues, which we can talk about it at a later date. And Richard L. Baer directing, who directed a lot of stuff, basically every episode of Green Acres. So if you like Green Acres, you like Richard L. Baer. You also like Ava Gabor, and who doesn't? And of course, adapted for the screen by Rod Serling, taking a story that is a great story and adapting it to a very concise and very tight screenplay is a specialty of Rod Serling, for sure. He's done it before with Richard Matheson pieces of work, and he'll do it again, as we will see. But while we're at it, why don't we get into the bios? Now, as I said, Richard L. Baer, we've seen him before, and we'll see him again in The Twilight Zone. He directed 2 episodes in season 1, 2 episodes in season 2, 2 episodes in season 3, and 1 episode in season 5. So he is not a lightweight in the realm of The Twilight Zone, and he had, in fact, directed season 1, episode 14's Third from the Sun, if you like that episode. He also directed in season 2, we'll see him again when we get to the episode The Prime Mover. And then, if you didn't like him for all that, he also directs season 3 episodes, the season 3 episode To Serve Man. So, if you're a Twilight Zone fan, I know you love him now. But if you want, go back to Third from the Sun and listen to that, because that's just a great episode of a great episode. It's a great TV episode of a great podcast episode where we talk about Richard L. Baer. And like I said, we will see him again. So if you want to learn more about him, go to season 1, episode 14 of this podcast, Third from the Sun, and listen to him, or listen to the biography about him. Now, playing Mr. Don Carter. Mr. Carter was played by the inimitable, overacting writer, director, producer, singer, Mr. William Tecumseh Shatner. I'm guessing on his middle name. I don't really know. But William Shatner, nonetheless. Now, William Shatner is one of these people that you either love him or you hate him, it seems. There's not a whole lot of middle ground on Mr. Shatner. You either love him because of Star Trek, or you hate him because of Star Trek, it seems. And I'm not necessarily over-exaggerating that. It does seem to be, if you ask anyone over the age of 30 or 40 about William Shatner, they're going to say either they think he's great or they think he's a pile of crap. And there's really no in between, it seems. But regardless, Mr. William Shatner was born on March 22nd of 1931, and he passed away. Not yet. He's actually still alive. So, good news for people that love Mr. William Shatner. Now, between television, movies, directing, writing, producing, scoring, everything else, the man has almost 950 IMDb credits, but only 250 of them are actually acting credits. Now, I know what you're going to say. Bill, what was William Shatner's first on-screen appearance? Well, I'll tell you what that was. It was in a movie from 1951 titled The Butler's Night Off, where he played a crook. He then went on to be in an episode in 1953 of Space Command, Going Forward, The Goodyear Playhouse, The Kaiser Aluminum Hour, Studio One, Suspicion, stop me if you've heard these, Climax, Playhouse 90. Actually, in Playhouse 90, he played a man named Jerry Paul in an episode called A Town Has Turned to Dust, which was directed by John Frankenheimer and written by one Mr. Roderick Serling. Now, the interesting thing about the Playhouse 90 episode of A Town Has Turned to Dust is that Rod Serling originally wrote a screenplay for Playhouse 90 that was loosely based on the killing of Emmett Till, who was an African-American boy from Chicago who went to visit family in the South and supposedly catcalled a white woman, and for that he was severely beaten, killed, and dumped into a river. As a matter of fact, they just came out with a movie about it just recently, which I understand is quite good. So if you want to watch it, watch it. If not, go on YouTube or go on anywhere on the internet you can look. There's 1.5 million documentaries about the Emmett Till lynching, essentially, and murder. If you can stomach it, give it a look. But this episode, so he originally wrote this episode, Rod Serling did, of Playhouse 90, A Town Has Turned to Dust. He originally wrote it loosely based on the Emmett Till murder to sort of, you know, as we all know, Rod Serling loved to put social commentary or talk about socially comment on things in his writing and in his works that he put out about things that were just completely wrong or messed up or needed to be fixed in society, and certainly racism was one of them. I mean, you've got to remember, we're talking about an episode of Playhouse 90 from 1958 where, you know, the Civil Rights Act was still 6 years away. You know, Kennedy wasn't even shot yet when this episode of The Twilight Zone came out. So, you know, certainly 2 years before, you know, we're still talking the days of Rosa Parks. We're still talking the days of, you know, black people sitting at the back of the bus. We're still talking about the days of black and white water fountain and restrooms, and black people couldn't sit at the counter at Woolworths and order lunch, you know, or in cafes and order lunch and that sort of thing. And Serling wrote this episode of Playhouse 90 about the Emmett Till murder, well, loosely based on it. And it got put through the censor ringer so bad that instead of it being about a southern town that deals with the lynching of a black person, it now turns into a town in the north who a group of citizens want to murder or lynch a Hispanic person. So when you change it so drastically, it kind of, and not to say that, you know, Hispanic people weren't lynched back in the day either, they certainly were, not to diminish that in the slightest, but certainly it was, you know, about as far away from the original concept and original idea as you could get, unfortunately. So William Shatner played in that, along with Rod Steiger, who went on about 10 years later to have the starring role in The Heat of the Night, playing a racist, bigoted sheriff in a town in Mississippi, opposite Mr. Call Me Mr. Tibbs himself, Sidney Poitier, who plays a black police detective from Philadelphia who happens to be passing through and helps them solve a murder. Fantastic movie, by the way. If you've never watched that movie, by goodness, do yourself a favor and sit down and watch it. It's actually a really good movie, especially for the time that it is. It's very well done, and everyone that won awards on that thing should have won more awards, and so should everyone else that was involved in that picture. But we're not talking about In the Heat of the Night. We're not talking about Rod Steiger. We're barely talking about Rod Serling. We're talking about Mr. William Denise Shatner. I don't even know his middle name. Doesn't matter. The point is, we're talking about William Shatner here. So he was in that stunning episode of Playhouse 90, which could have been 100 times better than it actually turned out to be had they left Rod Serling alone to do his original idea and his original thoughts for the piece. But unfortunately, censors will censor, and that's what we wind up with. You know, everyone talks about censorship today. It was back then too, people. It was back then too. So don't think it's a brand new thing that somebody just came up with. Okay, it's been around for a long, 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 long time. So he was in that episode of Playhouse 90. He was in Kraft Theater, The Ed Sullivan Show, two episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Moment of Fear, One Step Beyond, Thriller, The DuPont Show of the Month, Naked City, The Intruder, Dick Powell Theater. I mean, you name it, this man was in it. And of course, he was in two episodes of The Twilight Zone. He was in Nick of Time, of course, and he was in Season 5's Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, which we will get to in due time. Good people, we will get to. All now 15 of you. I'm up to 15 listeners now, so I'm trucking right along, people, and I'm proud of every one of you that are listening to me. All 15 of you, I love you. But Shatner had quite a career throughout the 50s, 60s. Of course, playing bit parts, hopping around from show to show, playing different characters on each one. Until, of course, 1966 rolls around, and he is cast as James T. Kirk of the Starship Enterprise. And who would have thought that would have went on to be the juggernaut that it turned out to be? Of course, as you may or may not know, Star Trek was, in fact, created by Gene Roddenberry, who also wrote one episode of The Twilight Zone, which was I Sing the Body Electric. We will get to that in due time. In 1970, William Shatner was also in a movie which sort of ties to The Twilight Zone. He was in a TV movie called Soul Survivor, which was loosely based on the discovery of the B-24 bomber, the Lady Be Good, that was found in the Libyan desert after a bombing that they never returned from, which the episode, season 2, episode 1, King 9 Will Not Return, was loosely based on. So everything kind of comes full circle, so to speak. Now, in the 70s, he kind of had a little bit of a slump in his career. He starred in a bunch of different, in a few different, like, low-budget horror films and that sort of thing. along with other TV shows like Barnaby Jones and Mannix. Along with a movie titled The Horror at 37,000 Feet, which is sort of, I guess you could call it a companion piece to Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. But it's about an invisible demon in the cargo hold of a jetliner that terrorizes its passengers. Look for it, watch it. I've never seen it. I've heard it's something to see. But again, you're getting into William Shatner actually turning into William Shatner. And of course, during the 70s and early 80s was when he started his singing career with, of course, that being the somewhat spoken word version of Elton John's Rock It Man, which, if you haven't heard that, oh my goodness, make the time. But he was also in Kingdom of the Spiders, which, I've seen it. You can skip that one if you so decide. Unless you just love really campy B horror movies, then watch that. And it wasn't actually until the Star Trek movie started coming out that he started kind of becoming a name again. This led to him getting the role of Sergeant T.J. Hooker in the television series T.J. Hooker. Then he went on to do a few more Star Trek movies after that, and even appearing in some crossovers with the Next Generation, Star Trek TNG, if you will. He was at this point also showcased in his career his very comedic side with his role in 1993's Loaded Weapon 1. And if you haven't seen that, by God, do yourself a favor and check it out. But the man is just, he's always working. He's literally always working. He's been in stuff you've never heard of, stuff you've heard of too much. And he's still is in stuff, and I think it's funny that he is actually the only member of the Star Trek Enterprise, or the USS Enterprise, that actually went into space. So take that as you will. But the man's, getting up there in years now, and of course we wish him the best. He was also in a couple episodes of one of my favorite TV shows, Psych. So, you could check that out as well. Now, the funny thing, or one of the things I find hilarious, and it's a little trivia on Mr. Shatner. I won't go into, was he on Broadway, was he not, and where did he start, and how did he grow up. You either know William Shatner, or you don't really know William Shatner by now. Most anything I can tell you, you probably already know. He is Canadian. We don't necessarily hold that against him. But, be that as it may, He's one of those people, like I said, you either love him or you hate him. Now, I do remember that in the 90s, he garnered a little bit of controversy from the Star Trek community when he was the host of Saturday Night Live, and they did a sketch on the program where he was William Shatner, and he was appearing at a Star Trek convention, which conventions back then weren't like the Comic-Cons and stuff like that that you see today. It was really more of the die-hard, hardcore, quote-unquote, nerds that would go to them. You know, this was before Comic-Con became the juggernaut that it currently is, and all the other ones like Dragon Con and all those other ones that they have in Atlanta and Philadelphia and all those places that still get several thousands of people a year. I digress. Back to the idea. He was on an episode of Saturday Night Live where he played himself in a sketch about a Star Trek convention. And he was on a Q&A panel, and he was answering questions. And, of course, David Spade and I think Tim Meadows and some other ones were in there, and they were asking him questions. And the questions were just more and more obscure and absurd, to the point that in the sketch, he screams out, "What the hell is wrong with you people? You know, don't you have lives?" You know, and then that sort of thing, and just goes on a rant in the sketch about it. And he actually caught quite a bit of fury from Star Trek fans from that. And I always thought that was quite amazing. Quite amazing. But the fact is, love him or hate him, you can't deny that the man hasn't been very well woven into the fabric of popular culture 40 years ago and even still today. The man garners an audience when he goes down to the store to pick up a gallon of milk. And like I said, the only one that's been to space. So he's got a leg up on George Takei, even though George Takei, who also will be in the Twilight Zone, I think might have a better episode than this one. But I'm not going to, we're not going to get into that right now. What we're going to get into is we're going to get into talking about Miss Patricia Breslin. Now, Patty Breslin was born the same year as William Shatner in 1931. But she passed away, sadly, in October of 2011. So a mere, 12 years ago, she passed away, unfortunately. She was the daughter of a judge in New York City and attended the New Rochelle College, where she played leading roles in plays and graduated with a B.A. in psychology. Then she began acting in summer stock and before moving to Hollywood. She made her TV debut as Juliet in the NBC production Romeo and Juliet in 1952. During the next few years, she made frequent stage appearances and met her husband, David Orrick McDearman, who was an actor and a writer. They were married in 1953 and were divorced in 1969. But she does have approximately 66 credits on her IMDb, which, not a lightweight, but she's definitely not a William Shatner, or that sort of thing. But she was in the Philco Television Playhouse, the Goodyear Playhouse, Kraft Theater, Suspense, Studio One, Pons Theater, you name it again. She was in it, People's Choice, soap opera. She was in an episode of Maverick. She was in The Outlaws, The Detectives, Rifleman, Homicide, Tales of Wells Fargo, Donna Reed, three episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, one of them, like I mentioned, The Crooked Road. Great episode. You should watch it. Thriller, Perry Mason. And she was in two episodes of The Twilight Zone. She was in, of course, this episode and in season four's No Time Like the Past, which we will get to. She was also in an episode of Alfred Hitchcock, or two episodes, I should say, of Alfred Hitchcock Hour, along with Dr. Kildare, Death Valley Days, so on and so forth. Her last on-screen role was in the soap opera General Hospital, where she had a 26-episode arc, which ended in approximately 1970. So not a whole lot is known from her past that. Now, I'll go ahead. I know he's not really a big player in this episode, but actually, no, I won't. I'll save Stafford Rep for when we get to the grave, because that one will be a long one, just talking about the bios of the people in the episode, because they are all powerhouses. But for now, I think we can just move on to the trivia for this episode. So, in the trivia, Richard Matheson was so impressed with Patty Breslin's portrayal of William Shatner's wife in this episode that he lobbied for her to be given a similar role in Shatner's second Twilight Zone episode, Nightmare at 25,000 Feet, although she did not wind up getting the part. This is the first Twilight Zone episode to feature William Shatner, who was a future Star Trek person. There are others, of course, like I said, George Takei, Leonard Nimoy, and James Doohan all have appearances in an episode of The Twilight Zone. Patty Breslin and William Shatner were born 5 days apart. Like I said, they were born the same year, but they were actually born 5 days apart. The title of this episode, Nick of Time, was a pun both on the last-minute escape of the couple from their psychological prison, as well as the name Old Nick being a term for the devil. In addition, author Richard Matheson has been quoted as saying that he also considered the title to mean that time keeps nicking, i.e. cutting, into each of us as we live our lives. This is not the first time that Twilight Zone uses MGM's Town Square on Backlot 2 for its stories, but it is one of the episodes that offers the most viewing angles, including the barely visible railroad tracks insert into the pavement, which lead to the small town depot not seen in this episode, used in countless films and television shows there until the late 70s. In the opening scene, the couple ride to the garage in their car as it is being towed. That would be illegal in most places today and would be prohibited by most towing firms just for insurance purposes, if for nothing else, even in areas with no explicit laws prohibiting it. Apparently, people were a little more relaxed about such things in 1960. Now, there's also there's a part in the episode where William Shatner is telling Patty Breslin, when she's telling him, you know, when she's telling him how irrational he's being, he's saying, you know, I don't have to be, please don't treat me like a retarded child. And he actually said the R word, which I'll be honest with you, I don't care for. I have completely stopped using it some time ago. There's better ways to express that without saying that word. And certainly, you shouldn't say it, I guess, is what I'm saying, at least in my mind. There's better ways to express yourself and better words to use instead of that. And to the fact that Rod actually got some hate mail about using that word, even in 1960, from a viewer who had a son who was mentally handicapped, and they took offense to Rod using that word in the script, and he never used it again in his television series. So that's quite interesting. So let's move on to the goofs of the episode. Don puts two pennies, not one, into the fortune-telling machine before asking the question, is it really going to be 4 hours before we're going to get out of here? So he double dips in that one. Just after the 3 o'clock car incident where Patty almost gets run over, Don returns to the diner. As he sits at the counter, his wristwatch reads 10 minutes to 2. Then when he moves to the booth, his watch says 9:20, while the diner clock says 3:15. But again, you're looking at watching this on a 13-inch television screen in 1960 in black and white. You're not going to notice what Don's wristwatch says at that point. Because one, I hope you're engrossed enough in the story that you're not caring about what time, William Shatner's Timex says on it. But also, no one else probably noticed that either. Now, if you're watching it on a, 75-inch HDTV 4K with the Blu-ray, you're probably going to notice that, especially if you've seen this episode 18 times. You might notice that. You might actually start looking for little things like that, and you're probably going to find it. And certainly someone did. But either way, it's a little nitpicky, but who cares? It's still a goof either way. In most of the diner shots, Don Carter's right sleeve is smooth, but when he steps out of the diner and walks to the park, and then him and his Patty talk, there's a big pucker in the middle of the sleeve, like a hanger end bump. So different shirts may have been used or shot at different times. And, by the time they shot the diner scenes, the shirt wrinkle had smoothed out, which would make sense. They would shoot the daytime scenes first, so they made sure they had enough light before they could move to the diner scenes, which they didn't need light for because it was an interior shot. Simple filmmaking, as it were. So, let's talk about the likes and dislikes. I like this episode. I really do. Like I said, it grew on me over time. It certainly did. And again, I like it because it's not Shatner being totally Shatner. Patty Breslin, always a delight. Stafford Rep, always an interesting character, even if he's only saying 8 words. Still good either way. But I really like this episode. I think it was acted well. I think it was written very well. I think it was very suspenseful. It kept you engaged. And it was directed well. Cinematography was good. It gave that claustrophobic feeling and that feeling of suspense, which is what you're looking for, to me, in a good Twilight Zone episode. And I think we found it in this one. Now, my dislikes. Shatner does kind of turn into Shatner a little bit sometimes during the show. But that's about my only dislike. And I'm not a person that necessarily hates William Shatner. I'm just saying that you know what it is. You know what it is when you're going into it. You know it's Shatner. You know what I mean? But regardless, it's still a good episode. It's definitely... Is it a top 5, top 10, top 20? Probably not. Top 50, most likely. Most definitely. At least in my mind. You might think it's bottom tier. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with your opinion, but I know my opinion is not the same. Do I love it? Is it top 5? No. But it is a very good episode, and it's certainly a good episode to show someone if you want to show them a Twilight Zone episode that also maybe like Star Trek. Why not? And all around, it's just a good episode. I don't really have a whole lot disparaging to say about it. So with that, let's get into the casting. So if they were to remake this episode today and someone from Hollywood were to call me and say, Bill, if we remade this episode, who would you put in this episode? Here's who I would put in the episode. For Mr. Don Carter, I would put Colin Hanks, because he has the ability to play funny, play smart, to play manic. He can do it. He can do a lot of different things, and I think he'd be pretty good in that. And for Patty, his wife, I would put Rashida Jones, because she has that same ability. And she's just a great actress, so I would put her in there as well. For the diner counterman, I would put Mr. Stephen Tobolowsky. Now, Bill, who's Stephen Tobolowsky? He is the guy that played Ned Ryerson in Groundhog Day. He's the guy that played Clayton Townley in Mississippi Burning. If you don't know the man, find the man, because you've seen him in a million different things. He's been in a million different things. And I guarantee you, once you see him, you'll be like, oh, that guy. I know that guy from 100 different things. And he also has a very good podcast called the Tobolowsky Files. You should find it and listen to it. It's a great podcast. I recommend it. Not that my recommendation means anything more than a, you know, gust of wind, but, you know, be that as it may, the Tobolowsky Files. Give it a listen. So, with that, and why not? For the mechanic, let's put Steve Sharipa in there, who you might remember from The Sopranos. Very funny guy. Used to manage a comedy club and then got into acting. It's an interesting story, his life. But we'll put him as the mechanic, why not, in Stafford Rep's part. Now for the moral and philosophy, I think we know what it is. I think it's rather obvious. Don't let superstitions and don't let anything control your life except you. This is your life. This is not the mystic seer's life. This is not the fortune cookie, you know, fortune life. This is your life. Live your life. You know, luck doesn't necessarily exist. Luck is a man-made thing, like time, that we've created to further place, you know, hardships on ourselves for no other reason, just for our own masochistic tendencies. So don't do it. Be your own person. Do your own thing. And don't let superstition run your life. I think that's about the best we can do on that. And so with that being said, thank you all for listening. I really enjoy having all 15 of you hear me on a weekly basis, and it really means a lot to me. I know I say that every episode, but here we are again. I'm saying it again. So if you have any questions, any comments, anything, drop me an email at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. And stay tuned for next week's episode, where the powers that be at CBS try to get Rod Serling to film episodes on videotape to save money in an attempt to be cheapskates. And part of the time, it actually works really well to amp up the creepiness factor. But and I think it definitely does on this next week's episode. So in next week's episode, we see a woman who is surrounded by robots and has to figure it all out. So stay tuned for next week's episode, The Lateness of the Hour. Thank you all for listening so much. Have a good week. And we'll see you then.